And then he starts thinking about the third son, his youngest son. Oh, even though he's my youngest son, he is such a special man. And he has such special qualities. He could also be the leader. And the father thinks to himself, which one should be the leader if all three are wonderful, special young men? And this is what the father did. He took his golden ring secretly, nobody knew about this. He went to an expert goldsmith who makes jewelry and things out of gold. He went to his shop. He went to his store. And he said, I want to tell you something privately that you should not tell anybody. I would like you to do some special work for me. And he shows him the beautiful golden ring. He takes it off his finger. And the goldsmith looks at it. He says, oh, this is a very special, beautiful golden ring. What would you like me to do? And the father says, I would like you to make two copies, exactly like my ring. And each copy should be so exact that you cannot tell the difference between the original ring, which is my ring, and the copies. Sometimes when you make a copy, you can tell this is the copy and this is the original because the copy doesn't come out as good. But sometimes you can make such a perfect copy that you really cannot tell the difference at all. So he wants this goldsmith to copy the ring exactly perfect. A perfect copy, two perfect copies. And the goldsmith, of course, would keep this a secret. And the goldsmith got to work. And he made two beautiful golden rings, exactly the same as the first. And you could not tell the difference between the original one and the other two. Same time that the father was very, very old, and he was laying in his bed, and he knew his time was coming soon, and he called in his first son. And Kinelach, as he gave his blessing, his bracha to his first son, he also gave him the golden ring. And he says to him, my son, I love you very much. You're a wonderful man. And you would certainly make a wonderful leader for our family. Here is the golden ring. And Kinelach, he gave his son the golden ring. And the son took the golden ring. But he did not put it on his finger because his father is still alive. He put the golden ring in his pocket. And he came out from his father's room, and he did not tell his other brothers what happened in there. But he just went to his room, and he put the golden ring in a special place. Or he went home to his house, and he came out from his father, and he took the golden ring, and he took it home, and he put it in a special place. And then the father called in the second son. And he says, my son, you're a wonderful man. And you would make a wonderful leader for our family. Here is the golden ring. And he also gave him a golden ring. And his bracha, his blessing. And the second son put it in his pocket and he came out of the room and he did not tell the other brothers what he had received. And the father called in the third son and he gave him a beautiful blessing, a bracha, and he told him that he would be such a wonderful leader for the family and he gave him a golden ring. And the boy put it in his pocket, the young man put it in his pocket. Each son had a golden ring. They did not tell the other brothers they had a golden ring. Because each one thought that he had received the only golden ring. And each son had put it in his house in a special place. It finally came the time that the father passed away. And the whole family, of course, gathered for the levaya, or whatever they called it, the funeral, whatever they called it. Because we don't know if this is a Jewish family or not, because it doesn't matter. And they had a great honor and respect, honorful farewell to their father. They put him to rest. And of course, the family gathered together for the Shiva, or for the whatever they did if they were not Jewish. And at the end of the time, the oldest son went home. He took the ring out from the special place and he put it on his finger. And as he looked at the ring, he knew that he had become the leader of the family. Well, the second son also was in his house, and he took out his golden ring and put it on his finger. And the third son was in his house, and now he took out his golden ring and put it on his finger. And the three men now were going to meet together that evening to discuss what is going to be with the family now that their father had passed away. And now they made a meeting of the three sons to discuss different things about the family. And of course, each one thinks that he will be the leader of the family. They made a meeting place. It was a cold night. And the three sons came to the meeting dressed in their coats and their gloves. And they came at the same time. And they go in the room, and in the room over there is a table and candles burning. The lights are on. And the first son now takes off his coat. He takes off his glove. And all of a sudden, the ring is on his finger. Look, the ring. Wait a minute. The second son took off his gloves. The ring was on his finger. The third son took off his gloves. The ring is on his finger. They sit down to the table. Each son looks at his ring and then he looks at the other rings. They look closely at the other rings, then back at their ring. Then they start rubbing their eyes. Can you imagine all three sons rubbing their eyes and then opening up their eyes and looking again at the rings? Hey, how do you have the ring if I have the ring? Well, I'm asking you the same question. How do you have the ring if I have the ring? Huh. How do I have the ring? Our father gave me the ring before he passed away. Oh yeah? He gave me the ring before he passed away. He called me in and gave me the ring. Well, how could you have the ring if I have the ring? Well, how can you have it if I have it? Wait a minute. I have the real ring and you have some kind of a copy. Wait a minute. I have the real ring and you have some kind of a copy. Wait a minute. Look, this is the real ring. You have copies. Where'd you get the copies? I don't have no copies. I got it from our father. And they start to argue. Who has the real ring? Who has the copy of the ring? Who is really the real leader? All of a sudden, Kinalak, the brother, said, wait a minute. What are we fighting? What are we arguing? We never fight and argue. We're good brothers. We're not brothers that fight and argue. We're three brothers from one father, and we loved our father, and we love each other. And all of a sudden, we're arguing? That doesn't make sense. On the other hand, it doesn't make sense that we're all wearing the ring if there was one ring. And why did our father... And what did our father do exactly? We're not liars. If we say we got the ring, we got the ring. We wouldn't lie to each other. Well, if we each have the ring, how could that be? There was only one ring. Like, we don't know what's going on. It's very confusing. Our father had one ring, He gave each of us the ring. That's what we're saying. And now there's three rings. What's going on? And if our father, for whatever reason, had other rings made, what did he do it for? This is very confusing. And we don't know anything for sure. Nothing is for sure over here. And Kinalach, the three boys, were smart enough to know that if you can't figure out yourself what's going on, what should you do? Let's say you try your best to figure out what's going on, but you can't figure it out. So, what can you do?
Ask a wise man.
Ask a wise man. Ooh, that's a very good answer. Go to somebody else that might be smarter or wiser than you, and let's ask that person, maybe they'll know something you don't know. So the three boys, the three men, decided to go to a special, smart, wise man and tell him what's going on and see what he has to say to help them to figure out what to do. And they chose a wise man that all of them agreed was somebody they respected and looked up to. And they went to the wise man. And now they sit down at the table with the wise man. And they tell him the whole story. And the wise man, Kinalach, he thinks for a while. And then he smiles and he says to all of the three men, "This is what I think will be a way that all of you will be happy with and will agree to fix this whole problem." He says, "The main thing about the ring was that this ring..." Says, "What's the main thing about the ring to be able to find out if this is a real ring or not? In other words, you're concerned, which one is the real ring and which one is not? Who is wearing the real ring and who is not wearing the real ring? Well, there's a way to prove it. By looking at the rings, they all look exactly the same. But the ring had two powers to it. One power was that Hashem will love you. And the other power, people will love you. And of course, even though you can't see Hashem, so how will you know if Hashem loves you? As we explained, it says in Pirkei Avos, if people will like you, if people will love you, that's a sign that Hashem loves you. If you make a good feeling amongst people, that's a sign that you're making a good feeling with Hashem also. And if you're upsetting people and getting people to be upset with you, well, that might be a sign that you're not exactly favorable in Hashem's eyes, and maybe you have to do tshuva and not upset people so much. So he says, each son should go out into the world and do what he's supposed to do. And he should wear his ring. And if he sees that people are happy with what he does, and people are happy with you, and you make a good feeling amongst the people with how you're behaving, that's a sign that you've got the real ring, that people love you and Hashem loves you. So go out and prove yourself. Let your actions, your deeds, what you do, how you behave with people, let that prove if you have the ring or not. And if people are happy and they like you because you're doing good things, that's a sign you've got the real ring. And if what you go out and do is upsetting people, or making people feel not good towards you with what you do, that would be a sign that you don't have the real ring. And of course, Kinalach, The three sons thought it over and they said, yes, this is the main thing. The main thing is not to argue who's right and wrong and who's got the real ring or not. Let's go out and do good things and that will prove our rings. Go out and do a good thing that will prove if you have the real ring. And kinalach, all three sons went out and they did good things. And for a while they thought to themselves, so which one of us has the real ring or not? And then, of course, at one of their meetings, they figured out, it must be, kinalach, that our father wanted all of us to have the ring. And it wasn't important who's got the real ring. What was important was that our father had confidence in us. Our father trusted that all three of us will do good things in our own way. And he made all three of us the leaders. And he wanted us to go out and prove ourselves and do good things and make people happy with us. So, before there was one ring, and now our father decided there should be three rings. And each ring and each son and each one of us has a responsibility to his ring to do good things and make people happy. And so kinalach, they saw the wisdom of their father. Their father was not trying to cause arguments. Their father was just trying to even make more good things in the world by making three rings instead of one. Now, as I said, this is a very important story for our time. I don't know if I'm going to explain exactly, but those people that will hear the story will figure it out for themselves. Just like the ring. You don't have to exactly necessarily explain the ring. You go out and you see how you behave with the ring. Well, the same thing of the story. The person that thinks into the story will understand what is being said. The big tzaddik that everybody knows, Reb Zusha Me'anipoli. So before he was Reb Zusha Me'anipoli, and a big tzaddik, he was a hidden tzaddik that nobody knew that he was a tzaddik, and he lived in a different place. I think it was called Astra'a, but I'm not exactly sure. The name of the town was called Astra'a. Or if it was a different town, it's not that important. The main thing, he lived in a certain town, and he was a very poor man, and his family was very poor. Sometimes they had no food, and they were hungry at night when they went to sleep. And, you know, I guess there's other poor people in the town, and nobody knew that Reb Zusha and his family was so poor. They didn't go around advertising it. And, you know, they did the best they could. Nobody paid special attention to them. Nobody took special care of them. But they didn't go out asking for help. And they lived in that town. Later on, Reb Zusha became a very big tzaddik who everybody knew he was a tzaddik. And people came to him for brachas. They came with tzetlach, with pidyonis, with a, you know, with a letter asking him to help. Of course, when they ask a tzaddik to help, you're asking Hashem to help because a tzaddik is close to Hashem. And people gave him money. It's a minig to give a tzaddik money for tzedakah, that he should use the money for his halakha things. And in that zchus, his davening will help you. Not that the tzaddik is making a business out of it, chas v'shalom, but it's good for you. If you give money to a tzaddik, because it's being used directly for the Torah and mitzvahs. And you get a big mitzvah from that. Like you buy yourself a wonderful thing and you say, I spent this money and I got a wonderful thing. Now is that wasting your money?
No.
Of course not. You bought yourself a wonderful thing. You give money to a tzaddik and the tzaddik will daven for you. So you're helping the tzaddik, but you're helping yourself more. Now, Reb Zusha also dressed like a tzaddik. There was a special kind of a kapata that he wore.
a special kind of a hat or a shtreimel or a spatik, you know, made out of fur. And he had people going with him. And he had a beautiful wagon with horses. Not because he's showing off, chas v'shalom. But it's a kiddush Hashem when he dresses in those beautiful clothes. And there's certain ways to use out money and beautiful things to make a kiddush Hashem. Like a king. Does a king dress up in regular clothes or special clothes? Now, is he showing off, or that's because it's an honor to be the king? It's an honor to be the king. And this is why Reb Zusha did these kinds of things. But deep down inside, he was exactly the same person as before. A tzaddik. Before he was known to be a tzaddik, he was a big tzaddik. And afterwards, he was still exactly the same tzaddik. The only difference was, now people knew about him. And he dressed differently. And he wasn't poor anymore. But was he a different person or the same person? Exactly the same person. Now one time, the people of Astra'a, this town where he used to live as a poor man, when they found out that Reb Zusha was a big, big tzaddik and very famous, they invited him to their town to make a special Kabbalas Panim, like a party, to have the tzaddik be there. And he says words of Torah, and everybody comes out to see him and give him honor, and to see him, you know, to see a tzaddik is a big, special thing for you to do, to hear his Torah. And the rich people of Astra'a got together, they planned a beautiful meal, and they made a beautiful meal in the shul with beautiful tables, and people were invited, and of course by the head table were sitting all the important people and the rich people, and Reb Zusha is going to sit at the front, because he's the guest of honor, he's the main thing. And he comes to the town in his beautiful wagon and horses, and he steps off the wagon in his beautiful special coat, his special kapate, and his special hat, and everybody sees Mamas like a king. And everybody was there, and of course the rich people and the important people are the closest ones, and they bring him in, and they sit him down, and he says words of Torah, and then they invite him to the meal, and the tables are set like for Shabbos and Yontif, and he sits by the head table, and the important people are sitting around by the head table, and all the other people are sitting at the other tables. And they go wash, they have a beautiful challah over there. And now the first thing they serve is going to be soup. They serve Reb Zusha a bowl of soup. And they're waiting for Reb Zusha to start eating. They want him to start eating before they eat. All of a sudden, Reb Zusha takes his spoon, and he opens up his kapate. He puts the spoon into the soup, and instead of putting it in his mouth, there's a pocket. You know, sometimes in a coat, in a kapate, there's an inside pocket. He puts the spoon of soup into the pocket of the kapate as everybody's watching, and he's talking to the kapate, and he says, "Here, kapate, here my coat. Eat the soup. It's good. You'll like it." And he pours the soup into his pocket. Then he takes another spoon of soup and he puts it into his kapata. "Here, I hope you're enjoying the soup. It must be delicious. Here, it's for you. Have some more soup." And he's pouring the soup into his kapata, in his pocket, into his coat. And everybody's watching. This is a tzaddik. I mean, this is our guest of honor. He's a great man. I mean, why is he feeding soup to his coat? Why is he pouring soup into his pocket? I mean, what's going on over here? Now, if it was a regular person, you know, I think he's nuts or something. This is a tzaddik doing it. As we know, everything a tzaddik does is halik and special. What's halik and special over here? He's pouring soup into his kapata. And Reb Zusha now says to everybody, and this is the amazing thing, how a tzaddik will figure out a way to teach a lesson. He is teaching a way, he is figuring out a way to actually teach these people a certain lesson. and he's doing this by putting soup in his pocket, in his kapata. It's an amazing thing. And he says to the people, years ago, I lived in this town, and I was a poor person. And actually, I was closer to Hashem than I am now. I was the same person, but actually I wasn't the same person. I was actually closer to Hashem then, more than I am now. Why? Then, I would learn, I would daven, I would do mitzvahs. And nobody would bother me. I was a poor man in my house, or I'd go to the shul. Nobody would talk to me, nobody would bother me, nobody would come to me. I had all the time to learn and daven and do mitzvahs. Nobody really cared about me. So I went about my life, and I learned Torah and did mitzvahs, and nobody really knew about it. Nobody paid attention to me. And I served Hashem. But now that everybody knows who I am, and I dress up in this fancy coat, and I wear this fancy hat, and I have a nice wagon with horses, all of a sudden now, lines of people are outside wherever I am. And they're coming to me and they're asking me for a bracha or to help or for a fuah shleima or a bracha for a shidduch or some kind of a special help. People are bothering me all the time. And they're giving me money and I have to take the money from them. And I have people coming to me all the time asking me questions and with emergencies. And they're coming to me in the middle of the night. There's some kind of an emergency going on. Now, I can't daven and learn and do mitzvahs the same way. People are always bothering me now. I'm not as close to Hashem as I used to be. Now, when I was really close to Hashem and I was living in this town, nobody paid attention to me. Now that I'm dressed in this fancy coat and I come to this town, all of a sudden everybody makes a big deal, but I'm exactly the same person as I was. In fact, I was even better then. So the only difference is that I'm wearing the fancy coat. When I lived here before, did anybody make me a big meal with a soup? No. In fact, most of the times I didn't have even soup and I didn't have even bread to eat. And I lived in this town. Now I come to this town in a fancy coat, I get a nice bowl of soup. So really, the soup is not for me because I'm the same person as I was before. The soup is for my coat. So therefore, I didn't eat the soup, I gave it to my coat. Because the soup is for my kapata, it's for my coat. Why do I get this soup? Not because of me. I was here before, the same person. I never got a bowl of soup. What's different? I'm wearing this coat. So the soup is for my coat. So I'm pouring the soup in my coat. The soup is for my coat, for my kapata. You understand? So he's teaching them a lesson that you don't look at the outside, you look at the inside. You don't make a big deal out of the outside.